Already flying. Okay, so you had a question. What? How did Husham get away with it?
No, what happened to him after he did what he did?
Oh, yeah. That's what. Okay, so what happened with Husham afterwards? So it's interesting. If you look in the Torah, you have all the sons of Yaakov. They all have a number of sons. Yaakov, the 12 tribes, they all have many children. Husham, Dan only has one son. Husham. And on top of that, he's deaf. Now, this is not like today when people are deaf. There's hearing aids. There's this. There's whatever. I don't know if he couldn't talk, but he was deaf. He's hard of hearing. So figure, oh, you can imagine every night they put the little son to bed. Oh, little Husham, what's going to be of you? You're deaf. You're our only son. What kind of tribe are we ever going to have? If you look in Parshas Naso, Dan had the largest tribe of all the tribes. He had more populace than any other tribe. So what do you see from that? You see that, you know, things don't necessarily turn out as bad as people think they are. You figure, all right, what am I going to do? It's a colicky kid. You know, what's going to be the future? And you see that when it came time to kill Esav, he was the one who killed Esav. When it was time to develop the tribe, he was the one to develop the tribe. So he was rewarded greatly for killing Esav, and he ended up having a big tribe. So that's what happened. What happened with Esav? I don't know if Esav had an entourage necessarily.
We did see he had.
I don't know how big his entourage was, and I don't know if you know. And you know, once you've killed the leader, the others, you know, scatter. Yeah, so that effectively ended the argument, which would prophesize, you know, many future events of world history of times where the Jewish people, Yaakov and Esav, meet many times in life, and it's a foreshadowing of conflict between the Jewish people and Amalek, right? Three times Yaakov had conflict with Esav. One time when he took the blessings from him, that's next week's parsha. Then when Yaakov returns. Esav wanted to stop him, and he was able to get through. And this is the third conflict. After Yaakov dies, he also wins posthumously. He wins. So there's many
suggestions. The second time wasn't so bad because they kind of made peace.
Yeah, but he was threatening to destroy him.
Yeah, but he did.
He was threatening to destroy him.
Actually embraced and this.
And yeah, but yeah. He had 400 men. He was planning on destroying him. So the rabbis tell us that these three confrontations between Yaakov and Esav were meant to historically predict in the future. There'll be three great conflicts between the Jewish people and Amalek, which happened as well. That happened when the Jewish people got the Torah at Sinai, and they were going to move on. Before they get the Torah at Sinai, Amalek went and attacked the Jewish people. Yeah. And the Jewish people won that war. They got the Torah. So that's like the birthright of the world, right? Second time is when what? When Amalek was from Haman. When at both times it's interesting as Yaakov was wanting to come back to Eretz Yisrael, the second time Esav tried to stop him. So when the Jewish people, after they were exiled, they wanted to come back to build up the second temple, Haman, a descendant of Esav, tried to stop them as well. And everything ended up pretty friendly and palsy-walsy. Mordechai became the viceroy, and Haman got killed. So what was the third time? The third time was the Holocaust, when Germany, which is descendants of Amalek, they threatened to annihilate the Jewish people, and they did a lot of damage. But at the end of the day, Germany lost, and the Jewish people got a homeland. And that's sort of hinted to as Yaakov's head rolled, as Esav's head was knocked off. Yaakov, although he was dead, he picked up his head and smiled. So it's like, you know, the 6 million, so to speak, smiled when they saw that the state of Israel came into being. So this was Esav came back to him prior to Yaakov's return. There are two times Yaakov returned. And two times Esav tried to stop him. One time Yaakov returned alive. One time Yaakov returned dead. So this all is all telling us a lot of future in what's what these stories are, not just stories. They're telling us what the future of the history of the world is.
So are we done with encounters? With
we're done with Amalek, maybe, Amalek? But we still have Ishmael. Ishmael is the last one. Ishmael is the last one and the worst one. So that's what, and there's still a little bit more Amalek to deal with. We got the West is Amalek. America is Amalek too. It's all. Okay, let's continue now. We didn't, so we still got to finish up this last thing with Yosef's bones. So we just said a person doesn't finish up a job when he's lazy. His children will die in his lifetime. His wife will die in his lifetime. That was the last thing we mentioned. Okay, now, Amar Rav Yehuda Marav. Now another teaching of Rav Yehuda Marav. Mivnei ma nikre Yosef atzmos b'chayov. Why was Yosef referred to as bones during his lifetime? How do we know this? Look at the note. Before Yosef died, he made the Jewish people swear and said, God will indeed remember you and you will bring my bones up out of here. Right? So Yosef, while he's alive, is calling himself his bones. Okay? You know, just say, bring me, what am I, my bones? I'm still alive. I'm not bones. Right? So why is it's a disparaging term, bones. So why did is Yosef called bones? And he has to bring, in other words, he kind of insulted himself sort of to do a little bit of kapara. So what did he do wrong that he needed to atone? Neshlomicha b'chvod aviv. Because he didn't object on behalf of his father's honor. When was this? Interesting story. Because when he was pretending to be the viceroy and not their brother, so they had to speak to him very respectfully. And during all the encounters when they were speaking to who they thought was Tzofnas Paneach, to come relay, they would say to Yosef, they would refer to their father Yaakov as Avdecha Avinu, your servant, our father. Your servant. They're calling Yosef, they're saying to Yosef, our father, which is Yosef's father, but they don't know that he's Yosef, your servant. And he's hearing his father being called his servant. Velo amr lahu velo midi. He didn't say anything. He didn't say, don't call him my servant. Well, he couldn't say that because that would blow his cover. It was blow his cover. But still in all, he heard that. Now, we'll see shortly how many times did they call him your servant? Five times during the discussion. Hold on to that. So anyway, so since he sort of lacked respect for his father, so he had to atone for it by calling himself his bones. So therefore, which interesting, look how the Maharal says that just like when he heard his father being called your servant, he was stone-faced. So therefore, he's compared to bones, which are the least flexible part of the body. Okay. And while we're on this topic of Yosef there, Amar Rav Yehuda Marav, and some say it's Rabbi Chama Rav Chanina, Mipnei Ma Meis Yosef Konach, and why did Yosef die before his brothers? Now, first of all, you're going to say, well, because if anything, he shouldn't have. He was the second youngest. So normally, he should have died almost the last, but he died the first. Right? He died at 110. Okay? And none of his brothers died at 100, before 120. They had the good 120 or more.
More.
And he died at 110, so he died first of all the brothers. So why did he die 10 years or whatever? First of all, it seems he died 10 years before he should have died anyway. He should have lived till 120. He died at 110. But more than that, they're saying he died before all the brothers. So why does he die before all the brothers? Mipnei shehinig atzmo barabonos, because he carried himself with authority. Not that he wasn't allowed to. This is not a punishment. But look at the footnote below. The Gemara says that power buries its possessors. And you could explain that on many levels. Simple level is, it's a stressful job. I mean, just take a look, Lahavdil Obama, when he became president, his hair was black. His hair was black. Now it's almost all white.
No presidents go through that.
Yeah, I'm just, because they've got a lot of respect, a lot of aggravation. Being a leader is not a simple thing. Because everybody criticizes you, no matter what
aggravated.
You do.
He got very aggravated with Netanyahu.
He gets aggravated with everybody. He's aggravated with all the Republicans. He's aggravated with anybody who disagrees with him. Right? Such a liberal. So that's what happens. Being in a leadership role will bury you just from the stress and all these things. There's another, I believe it's a Medrash, specifically asked why he died 10 years before. Because that's really what it is. He should have lived at least till 120. He dies 110. So the Gemara says, because, back to what we said before, he heard the brothers referring to his father as your servant. So he heard it 10 times.
5 times.
Well, hold on. It says 10 times, even though I told you 5 times. So hold on. It says he heard it 10 times, and for each time he lost a year. But if you look in the Chumash, you're only going to find 5. So what's the pshat? The pshat is Yosef had to conceal his identity. So he had to do a number of things to conceal his identity from his brothers. One of the things he had to do was have an interpreter stand in between him and his brothers, and he had to pretend that he didn't know Hebrew. Because if he knew Hebrew, that's a dead giveaway. No one in Egypt knew Hebrew. Nobody. That was the one language. Even though Paro knew 70 languages, he did not know Lashon HaKodesh. And that's why Yosef really, before he was taken out of the dungeon, a malach came and taught him all 70 languages. Because when he got promoted, Paro wanted to promote him to vice. He said, we can't make him vice. He's a Jew boy. He doesn't know the 70 languages. He says, oh yes, I do. Because the mom just taught him the night before. And then privately, he told Paro, I want you to know something. I know 71. I know Hebrew and you don't. So I should really be the king, but I'll keep quiet. And Paro made him swear. Paro made him swear to keep quiet. Don't tell anybody about this. Yosef says, okay, I swear I'm not going to tell anybody about this. Right? So now, when the brothers come to him, he has to really play that he's a viceroy and he's not Yosef. So he dresses differently. He grew a beard since they lost him. But one thing's for sure, if he's going to start speaking Hebrew, so what does he do? He got his son, Menashe. He had a son already then, Menashe, who he taught him Hebrew.
With whom?
Because Yosef knew Hebrew.
No. The son, who did he have with?
Asnas. That's another story for another time. A Jewish woman. It was a Jewish woman.
Where did he find him? Okay.
That's another story.
Okay.
I can't tell you all the stories today. All right. So anyway, he taught him. So he said, he's my interpreter. Okay, have a good trip, Tony. So have a good trip. So it comes out, well, every time the brothers said in Lashon HaKodesh, your servant, the interpreter would say it in Egyptian, your servant. So even though they said it 5 times, he heard it 10 times, because the first time he heard it too, because he knew Hebrew. So I asked the question. What do you want from him? He knew prophetically that he had to disguise his identity. He knew he was trying to get the brothers to do tshuva. This wasn't Stam, he was hiding his identity just to be mean to them. He knew the brothers sinned by selling him. And he knew that they had to do tshuva for it. So he figured he'll spur them out to tshuva by giving them a rough time. And they'll do tshuva. That was his whole sake, was l'shem shemaim, not to get them back. So if part of the way to get the tshuva is he has to masquerade as tzofnas b'nech. So he has to get an interpreter. He's doing all these things not because he enjoys it, but because he feels he has to do it. Because really, in a certain way, not only is the leader of Egypt, he's certainly, in a certain case of this time, the leader of the brothers too. So the fact that he heard it, his father's name was called Avdecha, even though in the Hebrew, he couldn't protest, because if he protests, he'll give himself away, he won't help the brothers do tshuva. Further, he had to have an interpreter come to cover it up, so he had to hear it another 5 times, make it 10 times. So what do you see? The 10 times he heard it in protest, it really wasn't his fault, because he had to ensure that the brothers didn't know who he was, so he'd give them a chance to do tshuva. So what do you see? See, it doesn't matter. See, being a leader makes you do things you normally wouldn't want to do. Even though you have to do it, it brings yourself to the point where you can't even give cover to your father properly. That's the problems of leadership, because you sometimes are doing things that you just really don't want to do, and you're still stuck with the negative consequences of it.
You could have said, I don't want you to refer to your father.
Then that would be a giveaway.
No.
That's a given. You got to remember, an Egyptian king is not like a Jewish king. Egyptian king is a low life, is a covet seeker. Is all. You got to realize what that's all about. If he gives off any Jewish sentiment, don't talk about your father. What kind of goyish a king would say, show respect to your father? What are you talking about? I'm the king. Of course he's my servant. The whole world's my servant. So therefore he couldn't give himself away. Nonetheless, so that's why he deprecated himself by saying my bones to try to do some kapara for what he did.
It was a no-win situation.
That's what I'm saying. Leadership is a no-win situation. Right? Yeah.
Joseph was only 6 years younger than Reuben.
Yes.
How many brothers were there again?
12.
So
he's the second youngest.
How many kids in 6 years?
Oh, how there were so many kids.
How many kids in 6 years?
Well, first of all, there were four wives.
Different wives.
All right, so she was able, and she gave birth to most of them after 7 months. A lot of them were born early. And then the four. Well, not pregnant. They were very. It wasn't pretty active. They were very fertile.
Yeah.
People think religious people are so active. It's not so. Once a wife becomes pregnant, you're not always so active for the next while. Really secular people are more active. They make sure their wives don't get pregnant so they can be more active. Everyone thinks because the religious people have more kids, they're more active. They're probably less active. The ones who don't have kids, they're the ones who are more active. Anyway. Let's continue the next. We're continuing with Yosef now. Okay, now that we're on Yosef, let's stick with Yosef. Yosef, Hurat Mitzrayim. Yosef was brought down to Egypt. Okay, now this was, the question is, why is the Torah repeated? It said it at the end when he was sold, he's brought down to Egypt. Now it says a second time, two chapters later, he's brought down to Egypt. Why is it repeated? Rabbi Elazar, says, Al Tikra Hurat, don't pronounce it Hurat, even though it's spelled that way. He was brought down. Ella Horid. He brought down. Joseph brought Egypt down. What does that mean? Shehorid itstaknine paro megadlusam. He lowered Paro's astrologers from their greatness. In other words, not that he was just lowered down. He was brought to lower down the astrologers and dominate him. Okay? Because he would become great. In other words, He slowly was trying to get Egypt, it was God's plan, Egypt shouldn't be as pagan, and to be a little bit more religious. And the ones who led the paganism were the astrologers, because they're the ones who are reading the stars and everything. So you see, God brought him down. Remember, Paro had the dream, nobody could explain the dream except for Yosef. So therefore, he lowered them down, and certainly. And then it goes on, it says, Vayikneo Potiphar Sris Paro. And Potiphar, one of the officers of Paro, purchased him as a slave. Now, interestingly, the Gemara explains, why did Potiphar purchase him as a slave? Omarav Rav Shekonu La'atzmo. He purchased him for himself. He was planning on having illicit relations with Yosef. Because remember, Yosef was a handsome guy. And remember, this is an immoral place, yeah. Egypt. And they would like to be with men more so than with women. So that's what he really bought him for these immoral purposes. So Hashem had to protect Yosef. So what did he do? Bog Gavriel, the Malach Gavriel, came, Vesirso, and emasculated him. Okay.
Potiphar.
What?
Potiphar.
Emasculated Potiphar. Bog Gavriel appeared. So Gavriel came. Again, Bogavriel was Sriso, two different girses over here. So let's take out the brackets. Bogavriel Upiro, who masculated him. It made him that he couldn't have an erection and couldn't any of these things. How do we know? And therefore, you know, he gave him a prostate surgery, whatever. He gave him prostate problems, whatever he gave him. I'm just saying, severe, severe, and he couldn't do it. How do we know that? I mean, so now Yosef's in the clear. He doesn't have to worry. Potiphar can't fulfill his desires. How do we know that? Because Meikar, originally, he's called Ksif Potiphar. First time he's introduced, he's called Potiphar. But later on in the story, Lubsov is called Potiphera. And Phera, that ending word is the same as pro, is emasculate. So it's Potiphar who was emasculated. So that's how we understand that Hashem made it. So you see, Hashem was protecting Yosef the whole time. Okay, now we go to the last person, Milonu Godel Moshe, who was greater than Moshe, and who buried him? Hashem buried him. First, we're going to discuss the events that describe when it was decided that he was not to go to the land of Israel and he would die outside of Eretz Yisrael. It says, Vayomer Hashem Eli. This is in Devarim, Veschanan, when Moshe tells the Jews, I prayed 515 times to Hashem. And Hashem said at the end, Rav Loch, it's enough for you. Don't daven anymore. That's it. I can't stop davening and you're not going to the land of Israel. Interesting way to quiet him down using the words Rav Loch. He could have just said, stop praying. Rav Loch means you have enough. Rav, a lot, Loch, you have a lot. You have enough already. You got to live 120 years. You got to be the leader. You got to do this. You got to bring down the Torah. You want to go to Eretz Yisrael too? No, you had enough. It's enough. It's kind of an abrupt way of telling him to stop praying. But why those words? So Amar Rav Levi, Rav Levi says, Berav Bisar, Moshe used the word Rav much to lecture others. We'll see what it is. So Berav Bisru. So he was given the word Rav when he got yet lectured by Hashem. It was measure for measure. Now, when was this? Berav Bisar, he himself used the word Brav to lecture someone. And who did he lecture? He lectured Korach. When Korach said, you know what? You're not the only one who heard from God. Everybody could be a big person. And Moshe said to them, Rav Lachem, it's enough that you're a Levi. Don't ask for more. You want to be on top of that, a Kohen, you're a Levi already, Korach. It's enough. So therefore, Barav Bisruah. So therefore, when he was told, Hashem said the same word, Rav, it's enough for you. You got to give the Torah, etc., etc. Very interesting. So this is measure for measure. So now the question is, wait a minute, the two don't seem to fit at all together. Korach was starting a rebellion. Yeah, machutz if he was. Yeah. Well, you weren't the only one who heard from Hashem. We all should be able to do this. So Moshe told him properly, Rav Loch, you got enough. So that, you know, that was a proper rebuke. So because he gave a proper rebuke and he used the word Rav, so when Hashem gives him the rebuke, he gives him the same rebuke to him, doesn't seem to be fair. So but the Gemara seems to be inclined to say, is it sort of a punishment? You know, you did that to Korach, you get the same thing, seems to be something wrong. So one of the rabbis says an interesting thing. Even though Korach was doing a bad thing, there was one grain of truth and goodness in what Korach wanted. And what was that? Not to be satisfied with the greatness that he had. In other words, as great as Korach was, he says, I want to have more. But ambitious spiritually. There was a kernel. Remember, every lie, every big lie has to have a kernel of truth for it to exist. Or else someone's going to... If it's a total, total lie, no one's going to buy it. It has to have a shtickle truth. Right? Christianity. It's a total lie. But it's a shtickle truth. You know what? The Old Testament. It's based on the Old Testament. That's the shtickle truth. So, male, the Yoshka part, that's all a bunch of baloney. But they never giving up the Old Testament. They say there is an Old Testament. The Hebrews, they got the Torah at Sinai. They just make one little change. God changed his mind. Okay, but you couldn't start with total lies. Everything has to start with a little bit of truth. You know, Yoshka himself, he was a rabbi of the Gemara. He could do certain miracle things. So there was such shtickel truth to what he was. You know, secular Zionism. Secular Zionism was the worst thing for Judaism. They wanted to destroy Yiddishkeit. So how were they so popular? One shtickle truth. Let's love the land of Israel. That's true. That's the only thing. Everything else, but you can do every aver under the book. So you have to always have a little lie, or it's not going to last. So Korach also, a little truth, so the lie will last. So Korach had a truth. We should be spiritually ambitious. That's true. People should be spiritually ambitious. But you were taking it too far. You went beyond the red line that God gave you. So Moshe should have been a little softer. And he should have said, well, I'm really sorry, but God doesn't allow it. Why is he saying, it's enough? As if to say, don't be ambitious. Well, the ambitious part was okay. Spiritually ambitious was okay. You just should have said, you know, I'm very happy that you are spiritually ambitious. That's a very wonderful thing, Korach. And you should continue and try to know all of Shas by heart and be ambitious in so many ways. But I'm telling you one thing. In this one area, God does not give you permission. That would have sounded a lot different than saying, you got enough. You got enough is saying, forget about being ambitious at all. Well, that's not so. Korach can be ambitious just in where you're allowed to be, where you're not allowed to be. So since he gave a little bit too rough of an answer, so now Moshe Rabbeinu, we'll see, he's also ambitious. What does he want? We'll see in a minute what he's going to say. He wants to go to Eretz Yisrael.
Yeah.
I want to do mitzvahs in Eretz Yisrael. My life is not going to be complete. Spiritually ambitious. God said, you know what? It's enough for you. You told Korach not to be spiritually ambitious. I'm going to tell you the same thing. Again, he was supposed to stop Korach's revolt. Not for one second thing, not. But the way he stopped it, by saying, don't be so ambitious. That wasn't the right way. You should say, oh, ambition is great. I'm so proud of you, Korach, that you want to be more than what you are. And I'll tell you where you could be, and it doesn't violate the Torah. But I'm really sorry. The fact you want to be a Kohen, Kohen Gadol, I'm sorry. That already Hashem did that. But you want to be ambitious. Well maybe we'll find you another job. The Hasidic form, right, based on the Zohar, that the truth is, had Korach passed, Korach had a test. This was a test. Korach really, really was the greatest Jew of that generation. He was.
Yes.
And he knew it. And still God didn't give him any plum jobs. He didn't give him a big job. When it was time to be, Moshe got job number one, Aaron got job number two. Now what other jobs would he be given out? Who would be the prince of the tribe of Levi? That's, let's say, number three job. That should have been Korach's job. For sure should have been. Instead, Hashem gave it like to a relatively nobody. That got Korach very upset. Yeah. So that, and because of that, his wife got rates the moon. So he said, okay, I don't believe anything. I don't believe anything, and I could be the leader. This was a test for him. The test was, Schweig, halt, just wait, see what Hashem's planning. And he said, I'm ambitious, I should be more. You're right, you should be ambitious, you should be more. But not here. But Moshe kind of said, stop with the ambition. The truth of the matter is, had he passed the test, the rabbi said, there would have been a new position created. One you never heard of. You know, there's a melech, there's a king, and you heard of a kohen gadol. But there was supposed to be a third position created. And what was that? The Levi HaGadol. There was supposed to be a position called the Levi HaGadol.
He would have got that.
And he would have got that. But he'd have to earn it. And how would he earn it? By being quiet and not complaining. So, in other words, he had that spiritual desire for more, which is good. Everybody should be spiritually desirous for more. But you got to be careful. There's some place where you can't go. If Hashem already said that Aaron is the Kohen Gadol, stay away. This is not your area to expand. But you want to expand? Daven to Hashem and he'll figure out something for you. And that would have happened. There would have been a position called Levi HaGadol, which would have been a very important position. And it would have been a triumvirate. There would have been Moshe as the king, Aaron is the Kohen Gadol, and Korach would have been the Levi HaGadol. You had a triumvirate of strength. But Korach failed, and therefore it never panned out. There'd be never another person that great to be a Levi HaGadol. So you see, there's nothing wrong with ambition. And had he steered his ambition in the right direction, he would have been the Levi HaGadol. And maybe because Moshe was kind of abrupt with him and said, you got enough, you're a Levi, you get to carry the ark, be quiet and don't make any trouble. So Korach couldn't take that. And to a certain degree, Korach was right. I know there's more that I could do for the Jewish people. He was right. He just didn't know, he didn't see it. Ah, that's, you have to have trust in God. Maybe God will make something for you. You know? We don't know yet. So since Moshe was rough on him, and that maybe may have had Korach have a pushback in the wrong direction, if Moshe would have been more of a diplomat, and Moshe would have been, listen, I really think, you know, maybe I'll talk to Hashem and I'll see what promotion you can get. We'll try to come up with a new promotion for you. And maybe if he would have said that, maybe Korach would have listened. And then maybe, you know, so since you were rough on him, so now you want to go to Eretz Yisrael and you want to get a promotion too? Hashem says, no, sorry, you're not going to get a promotion. That's what happened then. Question?
Where did we learn from Levi HaGadol?
The holy books write this.
Because I never seen it anywhere.
Because it never happened.
So, but there was a reference to that.
Yeah, in the Hasidic works. They said it would have been a position of Levi Gadol.
Wow.
So a lot of times good things just never happened. Maybe Mashiach comes, who'll be the Levi Gadol. Okay, it's a half hour already.